Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, dear members of the Parliament, the members of the European Parliament, distinguished guests.
I can go stop.
I don't know what this is.
It was you.
Was it me, you think?
Why did me?
Okay, seems to be okay.
It's because we are too close to each other.
Perhaps.
It's Valentine's Day, so
we'll see how it will be evolving. Okay, so once again, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, dear members of the Parliament, members of the European Parliament, distinguished guests, and your students. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Erli Mantal. I'm the director of the Center for European Studies here at the Faculty of International Relations of this university. And I'm having the privilege to be the chair of this debate. Allow me to welcome you to this truly exceptional event, discussion with the President of the European Parliament, our honorable guest, Roberta Metsola. The role of the Prague University of Economics and Business as a public university extends beyond providing education and conducting research. We believe that institutions such as ours should also play a role in public discourse. In turbulent times, when we are faced with numerous economic, political, and social challenges, we must play a key role in public discourse, or public debate. This year, the year 2024, marks 20 years since Czechia and other nine other member states, currently member states, including Malta, where you are from, joined the European Union. For the two decades, we've been contributing to impacting and impacting the constantly evolving project of the European integration. Despite the crisis and imperfections of the EU, this country has significantly benefited from its membership. And therefore, we must look ahead and continue to shape this project together. The EU remains a strong economic and political player on the globe, and rather than asking whether to be part of it or not, we should be actively seeking ways how to shape the EU's future together within the EU with other 26 member states. However, this cannot be achieved without our personal engagement and involvement. Our voices are the ones that will determine the future. The elections that will happen in June are key for the EU of tomorrow. And also, I must add that the overall perception of the European Union here in the country, if you are aware of that, is not perfect. And in the last elections, the voter turnout was actually pretty low. And this country actually ranked amongst the countries with the lowest voter turnout among the other member states. I think there is a lot to change. As I already mentioned, nothing is perfect, but without asking and exploring how we can do better, we will never find the answers, obviously. And this event perhaps could plant the seed of more, bringing more awareness and understanding of the critical role of our say that we have in the EU. And I'm very proud that debates such as this one is happening here in our campus. Madam President, allow me once again welcome you here at the Prague University of Economics and Business. It's truly an honor to have you here among us.
Thank you.
Last but not least, allow me to express my gratitude to all who made this event possible, especially the Liaison Office of the European Parliament here in Prague, together with also a team of dedicated staff and other departments at the university who worked tirelessly to make everything perfect. And before we proceed with the debate, allow me to introduce our honorable guest. Roberta Metsola was firstly elected as a member of the European Parliament for Malta and Gozo back in 2013. And being re-elected in 2014 and 2019. She is the head of the Partit Nacionalista delegation within the European People's Party group in the European Parliament. She's lawyer by profession, specializing in European law and politics, graduate of University of Malta and College of Europe. She previously worked with the permanent representation of Malta to the EU. Following this, she worked with the High Representative for the EU of the EU for Foreign Affairs and Security Policy. Later, she was elected as the first Vice President of the European Parliament. And in January 2022, she was elected as President of the European Parliament, becoming the youngest ever person to occupy this role. Before we turn to the audience, I would like to use this privilege as a moderator and start or kick off the debate with the first question. As I already mentioned, the 20th anniversary of the 10 member states being in the EU, I was wondering if you could describe how you perceive the influence of the, let's say, the countries, or not the newcomers, the countries that joined the EU back in 2004, how they learned to promote the interest and fight for the interests coming from the legitimacy from the citizens. Because I think you are actually very specific case coming from a pretty small country and having a significant influence in the EU, representing the European Parliament.
So, thank you very much. Nice to be here. Thanks for spending a little bit of time with me. Before I start, I want to ask you a few questions, just to need to raise your hands. But how many members of the European Parliament does Czech Republic have? Tell me.
21.
Okay, a few of them are here, and a few candidates are here. How many of you have never voted for the European Parliament elections? How many of you will vote for the European Parliament elections? Okay, so at the end of this discussion, and I would like you to be able to ask me anything you want, I will ask you to leave this room and try to convince as many of your friends and family to do the same. You just heard from our moderator today that this country that will celebrate a very successful 20 years of European Union membership on the 1st of May, so same day as my country joined the European Union. I used to spend quite a lot of time in this country when I was younger, before this country joined the European Union, and we would tour all the universities. I can't remember whether we came to this particular one, I must say, in order to convince young people at the time who weren't completely convinced that joining the European Union was a good idea. But now to you, it's probably taken for granted. Ever since you were born, or just born, your country has always been in the European Union. And as we celebrate these 20 years, I'm here in Czech Republic to be able to discuss with you where we are, what we've done so far, how good we've been in certain matters. Some things we could have done better. Some things are not perfect. And the next 5 years will be crucial. And that you have a possibility, I would say even a responsibility, to choose where Europe and the Czech Republic will go in the next 5 years. I was just shown on a television interview a few comments from Czech nationals who gave reasons why they do not want to vote. One, they do not know their members of the European Parliament. Two, left, right, center, I'm quoting. Doesn't matter, they're all the same. Three, I'm very calm right now. I don't need anything. Why vote? And I had to answer on the spot. And I did by saying this. First of all, get to know your candidates. If you don't know your candidates, you might not like what you see. If you know your candidates, you'll be able to say, look, you promised me this when you came and asked me for your vote. It is now 5 years later. What have you done since? And to the person who said, I'm very happy with where I am and I don't need to vote, I would say that there are more people in this world who cannot choose their leaders because they live in dictatorships or in autocracy than there are people who can choose their leaders. So why give up on that fundamental right, duty, but also responsibility? When we joined 20 years ago, the discussion was, oh, we are so small. We are going to be swallowed up. With my country, you can actually do it. It's a metaphor, you can say. Yeah. Oh, but around that table, our voice won't matter because we will just be, in my case, six members of, at the time, we're even five members of the European Parliament, out of 750 members of the European Parliament. You know, 20 years later, that tiny country has the president of the institution. And if I can tell you this, that it is not about the size of your country. It is about the size of your ideas, and your integrity that matters around that table. It is not about how loud your voice is, but about how strong your voice is. But to do that, you don't need numbers, you need one person. And you can do all of that in the way you change the world around you and the way you choose the people that you want to represent you. And the last thing I would say is that for some of you to consider to go that one step further, I can give you a little bit of anecdotal as to how I'm in politics, but to go that one step further and to run as candidates yourself. Now that's hard. I will ask you this question. How many of you have ever run for any election? Anything, could be for your organization, for your faculty rep. It's usually the ones in the front row. Okay, not bad. Take the next step. Politics, back to that person who said all politicians are the same. That's not the case. It makes a difference. And if your political representative is not doing it because he or she believes that politics is a force for good, then that person is not deserving of the seat that you would have given him. So, if you let me speak, I'm from the South, I talk a lot, so.
It was told me that I should, yeah.
At some point, I'm going to start moving to see whether it's worth it.
Well, before we continue, perhaps I would mention some of the rules. We'll be collecting two set of questions. In addition, you probably realize that we have Slido that we will be using through the event. So please use the QR code if you would like to pose the question. This is also for those of you who are not sitting here in this room, but for those of you who are online, because there are also people watching us online, and I'm using the Slido, so I'll be also selecting questions that land here from Slido. Okay, so who would like to? Yeah, we have 1, 2, 3.
Can you tell me your name, please? So that's
first in the second row, and then we come to you.
Thank you for the microphone. Good afternoon, Madam President. My name is Tomasz Korek. I am a student from the Faculty of Science, of Social Science of the Charles University. I would like to ask, it is quite obvious that the legal framework for migration is not followed, in general. We see that the Dublin regulations are not followed by states. We have seen systems like the quota system not being followed and ultimately being abandoned. And we see that even now, individual states and even the EU are kind of surrendering on the idea of properly following international law when dealing with migration. My question is whether we should accept that this will change and that we will be actually able to follow the law, and whether and if the current system is not followed and is not functional, what kind of a international legal system would be needed in order for it to be followed by member states? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, so first one is migration, a tough one. We will see what comes next. Okay, here, gentlemen, here in the second row in the middle, please.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Adam Zinchik, Institute of Economic Studies. Previously, you were a member of the European Democrat Student Organization and other associations, Uniting Youth. How do opportunities for youth and youth engagement differ between countries? Which countries' youth delegates are the most active, and where is there still a lot to be done? Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. And one more, there's one more. We have over a lady over there on the left. She's about second, fifth, sixth row over there, yeah. Thank you. And the mic is...
Hi. So my name is Nela Shmevdova, and I am currently studying at grammar school. I am in my first year. I'm turning 16 tomorrow, and I would love to go to the elections, but I can't. So I want to ask you, what is your opinion about young people being able to vote from the age of 16? Thank you.
All right, so Tomasz, migration. Today, this morning, the Committee of Migration, as we call it, the Civil Liberties Home Affairs Committee, we voted on a new Dublin and some other pieces of legislation. That is our answer to what we were asked to do in 2019 when I got elected, together with my Czech colleagues, whose Czech citizens asked of them the same, that migration is at the very top of our concerns for different reasons. Different countries, as you can imagine, have different realities, but every country agreed that no one country alone could solve it. So you mentioned an international legal framework, etc. We have the laws in place. The balance that we found is that we have strong protection of external borders, that there is solidarity between member states. I tell you this because if you come from a country like mine and you feel that you are left alone, it is very difficult to run that narrative. But also, if you come from a country like yours, and you also see that you have played a much bigger role than other countries in welcoming Ukrainian refugees, and you also want that solidarity to be shown. And the last part of the three-year part plan is that we are very harsh on traffickers, because there is an economic model in this world that preys on the most vulnerable people on the planet, mostly women and children. If you come from a country that is surrounded by sea, the model is place those women and children at the bottom of the boat, not care if they drown. Many times they do, unless, as long as you have the money. And that we will put a stop to. This is, as you see, a very long answer to your complex question. But the risk would have been that I stand in front of you and I give you two extremes of that answer. One, that we belong or should have a Europe that has zero migration, or that we have a Europe that has full migration. And that would not be either the reality or a responsibility. But where we're standing from in the Parliament and in the Council, and here I would like to thank your country and its leadership for having steered this over the past few years. You have your ambassador here, not only MEPs, you have your ambassador to the European Union here, who found that middle of the road. The one thing, however, that we can have the best laws in the world. So we can have the best legal framework. We can talk about, you know, how we would like the United States to help in this part of solidarity, how more countries should be able to return people to their countries of origin. But sometimes, and I say this as a human, we forget that behind all those numbers, there is a face, there is a life, there is a family, and there is a dream. And that we would not be bearing our international responsibility, and my responsibility as an elected politician, if I leave that aside. Because at the end of the day, we are talking about people. And it is easy for us in the European Union to say, keep them out. How much more difficult it would be if you were a human where your parents have no choice but to try to see that you have a better life than them. Or that you belong to a religious minority and you are persecuted, or to a sexual minority and you cannot live in your country because you would be killed. There is the death penalty in some countries, so that's our responsibility. And as Europe, we should never forget. Because if we do, then we would be building the best legislative framework, but we would be forgetting our fundamental values. On youth engagement, thank you for that. Engagement. How many of you have been on Erasmus? Oh, okay. Wrong audience. Or perfect audience. So, how many of you think that it's too expensive for you? You know, some countries, they tell me it's too expensive. Mm-hmm. Do you know the European Parliament is pushing for more money to be allocated to Erasmus because this is a tangible benefit of being in the European Union for young people? I went on Erasmus when in 2002, I went to France. I cannot tell you I studied a lot, but I learned French. And some of the friends that I made while I was in Erasmus, because it was raining all the time outside, and I spent a lot of time inside with young people from all over Europe, are still people who are friends of mine today. And the experience I got, thanks to the European Union, is something that we really need to build on. Similarly, freedom of movement, the rights and opportunities that you have to go from one country to another, to study, to work, to travel, to live abroad, to get to know people who are from outside your borders as well, not only from inside your borders, and use this opportunity. Because you might find yourself in a situation where it's very difficult when you are older, if I can put it like that. And that is something that you should take advantage of now. The difference in European countries, I can tell you, I had a similar event in Bucharest just a few days after the European Union decided not to allow Romania and Bulgaria into the Schengen area. You know, I had to face a group of young people like you, and I say, I'm sorry. We have, after 13 years of membership for you, have decided that you cannot yet come in because one country has blocked you, or two, depends how you argue that. And for those young people, you know what their answer was? So you expect us to be pro-European. You expect us to help whenever we are asked. And in that context, it was really at the beginning of the, almost 1 year of the Ukraine war. And you said, we said, we have taken a huge number of refugees. You are asking us to transport grain outside through our harbors in order to keep the Ukrainian society afloat, in order for salaries to continue to be paid, for financial Ukraine to survive. But you do not want us to travel and move, as all of you do. Even though, legally, we could have done that already 12 years ago. So the difference between member states is staggering in that regard. And I must say, you know, young people, and you make a difference there. Because we are also responsible in a way, but also have inherited situations. I give you Brexit as one example, where only 36% of young people voted. But over 84% of older people voted. I can tell you, if more young people had voted, the result would be different. That is a democratic process that young people could have made the difference on. And then the third category is, rather than the countries that have left, but the countries that want to join. I have met with young people in Ukraine. I have actually done also a similar town hall in Lviv, with President Zelensky, and I have addressed tens of thousands of young people in Moldova. One hope, one dream. To be able to vote in the European Parliament elections by being citizens of the European Union. That is what those countries are aiming at, and our responsibility is that when somebody knocks on our door, that door is flung wide open. 16-year-olds. In my country, the vote is at 16. For the first time, we will have four countries voting at 16. Now, this is a specific, you are not a 25-year-old. You are not a 23-year-old. You are 16. And I remember the debate, and I voted in favor in my country to allow 16-year-olds to vote. And I had been very clear, and I said, look, when I was young, younger, I used to hate it when politicians then my age would tell me, you know, you are still young, your life is ahead of you, the future is yours. I used to hate it. You know, I used to be like, I'm living right here. I'm right here, present. I have an opinion. I have a thought. I would like to be able to use that opinion and thought in a vote. Now, my responsibility is, of course, to bridge that into making sure that you as 16-year-olds, I don't know whether you do, but whether you read paper newspapers every day, or listen to the radio, or watch the 8 o'clock news. Are they at 8 o'clock here in the evening news, or 7:30? Are you earlier? Yeah,
sorry.
We're at 8. Yeah, in Spain they're at 9:30, so yeah, earlier. So at 7 p.m., if you sit down at home and watch them. If you don't, I need to make sure that if you had a vote tomorrow, you'd know how to use it. That it is not a question of telling your parents and your parents any vote, although here I do a parenthesis. I have a 17-year-old boy, I have four boys, and my eldest is 17, and he will vote for the first time. And I really hope he votes for me. But in that regard, and I have to make my pitch. He actually asked me to pitch him. I was like, well, I thought giving birth to you was enough, but okay. But I have to be able to make sure that what shows up on my son's social media feed is, I'm not even going to say correct or not correct, but is real. Because that's our biggest challenge. And if we manage to overcome this big disinformation propaganda challenge, and it will be hard, then I would be extremely enthusiastic about, and of course this is a decision to be taken by your leaders, not me, but that discussion actually takes to the next step of the kind of decisions that you should be allowed to make.
Okay, thank you. Let's do one more round here in the room, and then we will continue with the questions later. So we took some of the questions from here, so perhaps we could take one over there from that side. We have we have over there, Mike. Yeah, please. In the first row.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, organizers. Good evening, President of the European Commission. I hope you enjoyed here in Czech Republic. I want to thank you for the project which goes to a new European direction, which is European disability card. And I want to ask you how long it takes to make a project live. I want to ask you about more information for this project, because in my opinion, there is no reason to not make it with benefits like deposit for disability people on train or any other transport.
Thank you. This is the first one. We can take one, two more.
Entry into force of the disability card. My guys, whatever.
Sorry?
The daily? Okay, sorry.
Okay, gentleman over there. Yeah.
So, Madam President, thank you for coming.
You want to stand up so I can.
Oh, yeah, sure. I'm a student of diplomacy.
Okay.
And I also lived in France. And I remember listening to Jordan Bardella, who will soon, in all likelihood, become a member of the Parliament.
He's
the European Parliament. He's quite popular right now. He said something like, le chemin aux enfers est pavé de bonnes intentions. So the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And it's quite relevant in the context of France, because France has been one of the major, obviously, is the centerpiece together with Germany of the European Union. And it's also been historically one of the major proponents of the multicultural approach, the multikulti, as we see in Germany. Well, from what I saw, I had many friends who were, came from an immigration background. And they had immigrated quite well, but I must say that I knew a lot of people, even at my school, where, and obviously this is anecdotal, so it doesn't really count, I'm not citing statistics. There were a lot of problems with immigration, especially with, and it's very difficult to phrase this if you don't want to get cancelled, and I'm on cameras right now, so I'm not going to say anything that will incriminate me later on in my diplomatic career. But would you say that the multicultural approach has become outdated, because you see this in France and in the UK, there's a massive upsurge in immigration from certain areas, And the potential for integration has somehow become, as the diaspora grows, has somehow, you know, it's microeconomics, diaspora gets bigger, and, you know, the will to integrate the society, the native society, gets is reduced. So would you say it's, you know, the multicultural approach is dead, and we should, you know, look for a sort of American model where people really are forced to integrate fully and not, you know, keep their original culture?
Thank you. Okay, one more. Let's do here in the front, gentlemen, fourth row, or yeah, exactly.
Thank you for the word. Good day. So my question is about the newest controversial steps of new Slovakian government. I'm talking about new amendment to the criminal law, which is to be adopted soon, and it strongly decreases punishments for corruption motivated crimes like bribes and frauds worth hundreds of thousands of euros. This amendment also closes a prosecutor's office that deals with corruption and serious crimes. So my question is, if this amendment is adopted, do you think that the European Commission should take legal actions against Slovakia, such as withdrawing European funds? Thank you for your answer.
Thank you very much. Okay. So I think we have three, so we can...
three big ones. Okay, so, disability card, finally we have agreed on it. You know, this will be my fifth European Parliament election campaign, and in every campaign we say, it is high time, whenever we meet, organizations representing people with a disability, that we can commit to. Why? Because why would we not make our European Union more inclusive, more accessible, more equal? Whether it is for travel purposes, as you mentioned, whether it is for studying purposes, for working purposes, when it regards the movement of health data, when it comes to funding for sports, for culture, for employment, why not? And every 5 years we look at each other and say, and we haven't done it yet. We finally did. Last week, reached an agreement. I must say, here the European Parliament went much further than the original proposal. And for us, it went in the right direction. We also need to focus in some countries where if you have a specific disability, such as a visual impairment, in some places you cannot vote in secret. And you cannot take somebody with you to vote, so accessibility. In some countries, there are disadvantages to being candidates. In some countries, there are disadvantages to being elected. Disincentives, I would say. So there, all of these are resolved, or at least addressed in the law. Now it's up to us to implement it. In the second half of 2020, again, in 3 years. So it will enter into force in 3 years from now. But there are already some countries, and this is important for you to know, that have already standards above. Huh? It's just that everybody else who's below needs to catch up. And it comes from basic things that most of our public buildings are not accessible for physical impairments, disabilities. That for that the older parts of our cities are very difficult for movement. In terms of incentives for you to have your transport opportunities, these are all things that will require a lot of investment, but at least there is a legal framework. That there wasn't there before, that legal framework that you referred to before. And I think that would be, that is going to be a very, very big, let's say, point with which we go to the European election, that we have delivered. And it was one of the first meetings I also had as president with, we have a number of members of the European Parliament who have a disability of different reasons. And with them, we work every day in order to have also a more accessible parliament and also around us as a building that we are better than we are already. That is my commitment, and I will deliver on it. On the French example, and is this, should we not be like America? Do you know, like, sometimes we forget that the United States is the land of migration. that you meet anybody who is a United States citizen, and he will tell you, I am the child of first generation, I am second generation, third generation, Czech, Slovak, if you are Maltese, they are in Detroit, a lot of them. In different countries have, you know, a lot of Polish people in Chicago, or, you know, so there are, this is also, I can tell you that the transportation secretary, the current transportation secretary in the Biden administration is called Pete Buttigieg, and he's Maltese, so we're everywhere really, but, okay, now, when the word road to hell is paved with good intentions, and I hope it translates well into Czech, but, you know, I would remind anybody who uses that term, you know, of what we saw when the coal and steel community came together. Out of the ashes of two world wars, when countries that were fighting each other met and promised each other never again. And we tend to forget that. In those two countries in particular, coal and steel were the first parts of integration that they could bring together in order to say, let's pool in our production to increase employability, growth, competitiveness, etc. Leaders from different political groups. Big decisions taken by Christian Democrat leaders in Germany with socialist French presidents. Difficult decisions. Making steps, creating the internal market, allowing for other countries to join, making sure we are an economic force, but also a force for values. And it is always easier to say that something doesn't work, to build on fear, than it is to build on hope, and on love, and on peace. Now, you might be thinking, oh, this is a naive and facetious statement, but you have a constitution, we have one too, it's called Article 2. And Article 2C says that, do you know what joins us together? Equality, dignity, life, liberty, justice, non-discrimination. And I think that we should remind ourselves of that. Now, have we made mistakes? We heard in the beginning, we are, of course, the European Union is not perfect. I was in Estonia 2 days ago, having a similar debate as I am having here. And I was reminded of the fact that there are still voices in Estonia who says, oh, it would have been better when we were independent because we no longer are. And then the detractors of that argument said, you know, when we were having that debate before we joined the European Union, by the way, you know, Estonia joined together with you, we used to look at Finland. That was much more advanced, also with geographical difficulties, 1,400 kilometer border with Russia. I know Finland very well. My husband is from Finland, and I met him in youth organizations. He's not in politics anymore, which is good. One politician apparently is very good. But to remind ourselves that the easiest thing would be to feel nostalgic for what never was. Now, do we have challenges? Of course. Have we looked at the word integration as a taboo? Of course. Have we thought that migration is a transitory phase from which societies will go through? Yes. And that's the reason why we have the challenges that we have in some countries more than others. You remember in Brexit discussions, these people from Poland and Lithuania are taking all our jobs. You know, my sister works in the United Kingdom. It is very difficult for them to have those jobs filled today by people who do not come from the United Kingdom, because in the United Kingdom, their citizens perhaps would not want to do that job, and they are not to be forced to. And my last statement to you will be that rather than talk about multiculti and whether it's outdated, I will say we have a responsibility. We have economic considerations. The European Union is not about making everybody the same. We are not homogeneous. We have different cultures, different traditions, languages. Thank you. You too. That we have different traditions, different cultural habits, different languages, everything. And we have the rule of law. And if you expect your own citizens to follow the laws that apply, then you would expect everybody who is in your territory to apply those laws. And that's perhaps where we have failed. And we have let go of the ability to make sure that laws are applied, which is what leads to incidents, to clashes, to unrest, and to people telling you, you know, I would like to feel safe. So these are all considerations we need to have. But I would refrain from one sentence phrases as a response to your answer, to your question. Because I would be giving you the comfort of, or the ability to seek comfort in those political fringes, which I don't think will represent your interests in the best way in the next 5 years.
Let me add one in Slovakia.
Oh, yes, 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 Slovakia. So, say, rule of law. I met with the Speaker of the Slovak Parliament. I had met this person also when he was Prime Minister. I have worked all my life in my career on an anti-corruption platform, also in my country. And I think the hardest time for me ever since I was elected member 10 years ago, almost 11 now, was when a journalist in my country was assassinated for asking the most uncomfortable, difficult questions to politicians. And what did politicians try to do? They tried to silence her. They went to court, they froze her assets, everything. She didn't stop. So a bomb was placed under her car, and she was assassinated in front of her son. 4 months later, the same happened in Slovakia with Jan Kuciak and Martina Kušnirova. And what me and a number of Slovak MEPs at the time said, we are countries that have been then more than 10 years in the European Union. We need to be able to live in a democracy where journalists are protected, where crimes are prosecuted. And in fact, as a result of that assassination, the public prosecutor's office was tasked. And we have been asking, and we will ask as a European Parliament, and we will continue to ask, and don't worry, steps will be taken like they have taken, they have been taken. We are not afraid in that regard, is that cases that are ongoing need to continue. And that if you break the law, no matter how powerful you are or who you know, you cannot escape justice. And that should be the same everywhere in our union, and not in one country, and not another.
That we also have questions on Slido. There are so many of them, but I would pick, as we have 5 minutes remaining, at least one of them. How to ensure that Europe comes out as a strong player on the world stage in a competition with the US and the world regarding economy, innovations, and influence?
Okay, one more?
One more. The other one is also, how would you ensure that the European Green Deal won't affect possible economic weakening and the competitiveness of the EU?
All right, so both quite related. You know, When Russia invaded Ukraine, and there were countries, including this one, that woke up to the realization that there was huge dependence on Russia for gas, right, for your energy. We had a choice to do with the European Union. Either we invest more in our energy mix and diversifying our sources, not moving from one unreliable partner to another, looking at our neighbor of the European Union that could help rather than hinder, because until then we were just a bunch of energy islands. I think we have succeeded pretty well. We were over 90% as a union dependent on Russia for gas. Now we are at less than 7%. And that has helped us in overcoming adversity. But we did it because we were forced to. We woke up on the 24th of February, 2022, with no choice. And what we need to make sure is that we don't allow global events to take us by surprise. And that when we talk about the strategic autonomy of the European Union, what do we mean by it? It means that if we are left alone, can we handle it? If you ask me this today, I tell you we are far away, but we need to work. If you tell me, how do we look at our allies? I would say we need to have more allies. We have looked inwards for too long. When we talk to our neighbors, our Western Balkan neighbors, our Ukrainian neighbor, in my case, our North African neighbors, and Sub-Saharan Africans, let's talk with these partners of ours. These human-rich, resource-rich, culture-rich, everything that don't like it when we talk at them, but that we talk with them. That when we look to Latin America, there are partners there willing to partner up with us. So I look at that. Of course, we look at our transatlantic relationship, waiting to see what will happen over the next months. This is also interesting for me, as I go country by country, that, you know, for you, probably you follow much more the US election than Czech politics. Is this true? Oh, not true. Very good. Okay. I think that you decide on your feet what you see. But how important that is, that relationship, which we have to react to in order to be much more competitive, much more stable, and much less vulnerable to economic shocks and ministry shocks, as happened in 2, almost 3 years ago. On the Green Deal, as you know, this is a pivotal piece, I mean, branch of legislation, which is a response, first of all, to most young people in 2019 who told us, listen, we are living in a climate emergency, we want you to act on it. So similarly to what was said about migration before, same was said about the climate. And that climate emergency keeps sticking. We have seen phenomena this year that are becoming more regular. In summers, with floods and droughts and fires. We don't have to go very far away to feel it and see it with our own eyes. So this legislation is about making us the most climate ambitious continent on the planet by being a leader in the world and saying we are going to change our ways. How we invest, what we do in terms of research, what products we produce, patents, innovation. We are the best at this. Not far away behind the Americans. Have we gone too far too fast? Many tell me so. But I am convinced that we can keep that trajectory of being climate ambitious. If we explain better, if we cost our proposals, if we consult every single country, including yours, as to how this will impact, if we recognize that there is frustration with bureaucracy, with lack of transparency, if we create social and economic cushions for older people who live in old cities of the European Union and say, I can't afford this. If you speak to farmers, you see that here as well, who tell you, you were the first to call at the beginning of the pandemic when you told us, listen, we need your food. You are the best at this. We've closed our borders with everyone. How can you help? Only for us today to say, you know what? Wait a bit. It's not okay. So we will be challenged, and this is a very important thing that we need to admit, that as we go forward with our legislation, which is necessary, that we build into that legislation and the implementation of that legislation an understanding, a cost, financial help, and a cushion. If we do that, we can really have a good, as we call it, green transition. If we don't, we lose our citizens. And if we lose our citizens, they will talk about the road to hell that is paved with good intentions. We need to, you know, to stay on the same metaphor, be able to say that I chose the road less traveled and I'm quite happy for it. And then that's leadership. That's responsibility. And that's accountability.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Time, but I think we can still do one very, very, very last question. So I know where to start. I think over here on the side, the lady in the green shirt.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I would like to ask you, Mrs. Metsola, which Czech politician, member of the European Parliament, is closer to you and why?
Very personal one.
Not personal.
You want one in aim? I was going to answer Václav Havel. I will tell you, you know, I have been very, I would say, I am close to many Czech colleagues. I mean, one of them is Marcel Kolaja, who is here. Mr. Svoboda was a member in previous legislature from my political group. You are lucky to have two Czechs in the highest organ of the bureau, which is the vice presidents and questes. So Marcel is one of them, and Dieter Schanonsov was another one. You have members who come to mind, Ludek Niedermayer, who is very active on environmental matters. We have Mr. Zdechovsky and Ms. Sojdrova. I have to go through the names. Margareta Gregorova. Yes. Martina Dlabajova. I can tell you Alexander Vondra. Jan Zahradil, Mihaila Solidrova, I didn't mention, so I don't know. But I can tell you that each one in his or her role,
Eurovone is a club.
You can tell that they fly the Czech flag. And that's important. And I can tell you that your prime minister flies a Czech flag, and your president flies a Czech flag when they are out of Czech Republic. You should be proud of your leaders. They work very, very hard. And they, you know, they love this country. I love this country too. One more, do I have one?
Five hands. Okay. Evening, gentlemen, third row. Thank you. Very last one.
I thought that we have a single market,
But as I recently experienced, I wanted to buy a one-and-done book from a US company, but it's built in Taiwan. But it's built in Taiwan. So it's US.
Book, okay.
So a notebook manufacturer, something like Dell or like notebooks.
Laptops,
oh, my bad.
So it's built in Taiwan?
No. this notebook can be purchased in Germany, but I am unable to buy it in Czech Republic because some legislation here in some countries are made somehow that they are unable to ship it here. So I need to go to the Germany to buy it physically or to ship it to my friend in Germany and give it from them. How can we this call a single market if there like literally isn't a single market? Mm-hmm. This is just an example. There are many of examples.
Like this.
Clearly there are many examples. So a very legalistic reply would be that if you are shipping from outside the European Union, then it's not a single market issue. However, what I would say is it is either a tariff barrier, that it's a national issue, or there is something that I had to do. Actually, one of the first things I did as a member of the European Parliament for my country is that it was more expensive for shipping companies to ship to my country, and therefore there was discrimination. It took years before some of those platforms actually put my country as a member of the EU. And we worked very hard because that's accessibility, although we suffer the economies of supply with smaller markets. But I'm sure, because we needed to do this, as joining the European Union, you have a consumer affairs authority. And what I would suggest, and I can do it myself, and our colleagues can do it, to tell them to look into this particular case, to see where the obstacle is. And if it is a case of the fact, we have a situation, our car driver have our right-hand drive. So when Brexit happened, it was very difficult. So now we import from Japan. But I would like us to have lower carbon footprint for movement of products. So it's a very, maybe individual issue, but one that we could look at. Also, compare to how you fare with Slovakia, with Poland. Poland is a bigger market, but see how you fare. But we will look at it, let me look at it. And so is it. I'm doing your job, guys. All right, I have to go. Yeah, all right.
Okay, good.
Nice.
I also need to look at the Slido because there is one actually. I know it's probably very last one, it's top one, but I will take it. Are there some rumors who will replace Ursula von der Leyen? Is there some chance for guys from Central Eastern Europe or Malta to become the next president?
Out of how many questions did you choose that?
Let me tell you, this one received 9 likes, okay? Share away. Because the one with 23 likes is will be my Valentine.
My husband will not be there. Although this morning I forgot, I must say, when I left very early to take my children to school, we were having Valentine. I thought, what? So, you know, I have been in many institutions, you know, you introduced my own biography in the beginning of the meeting. It's not about what I've done and where I've been, but without a doubt, I love the European Parliament. So I am currently working on trying to be re-elected by the people, by my citizens, who once again put their trust in me. I said this is my 5th election. I didn't get elected the first time. I didn't get elected the second time. As my father said, finally on the 3rd time I managed. But that has been hard earned. and hard fought and huge responsibility for me. It is that responsibility that I carry, and it is one that is the joy and duty of a lifetime. So no speculation about anything else. Only representation of Eastern European, Central and Eastern European, absolutely. So I have always argued for bigger, smaller member states, whether they are, you know, north, south, east, west, center. They should always, gender-wise, always form part of the equation. So absolutely, I'm a big fan of that.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, looking at the time, this was the very last question. Thank you very much for being with us tonight. For those of you here and also being online, for those of